They will regulate a militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We are going to be talking about a whole lot of infringements taking place in the U.S. Virgin Islands. My friend Kosei Ono, head of the Virgin Islands Safe Gun Owners, is going to be with us on the program. No, it's only been a couple of days, but there have been some major developments since the last time we talked with Kosei Ono. When we talked last week, Mr. Ono was talking about this substitute bill, the yellow bill that had been all of a sudden unveiled. They were rushing to pass it. Even worse than the bill that was proposed last September that's been sort of kicking around. And as it turns out, so they had the committee of a whole, right? So Virgin Islands has a unicameral legislature. It's just comprised of the state Senate, essentially. Rather than have a hearing on this bill in committee and then advancing it out, like is normally done, they just said, no, we're going to meet as a committee of the whole. So all of the state senators, basically the entire legislature, meets, and we're not having a committee hearing. They did have public testimony last Friday before voting on this bill. The problem was that the bill, well, one of the problems was that the bill that they brought forward on Friday, nobody had seen. It wasn't the yellow bill that had been proposed a few days earlier. It was a brand new piece of legislation. And they heard hearing, or they heard testimony on a bill that nobody had time to look at. Nobody knew what was in it. There were several objections from senators saying, I think this goes too far. I think that this is going to get us in trouble. This is unclear. And they ended up voting for it. Anyway, there were two dissenting votes on Friday. Two senators in the U.S. Virgin Islands legislature. Even though there were more than that who had problems with the bill as was written. The bill that none of us have been able to see. So this bill, again, we only know bits and pieces of what's in it, is now on its way to the Virgin Islands governor for his signature of veto. And Kosei Ono is with us on the program today to talk about how this particular piece of legislative sausage got made and what comes next. Take a look and a listen. Kosei, thanks so much for coming back on the program. I know it's only been a couple of days, but a lot has happened in the U.S. Virgin Islands since we last spoke. And I got to say, it sounds like none of it is good for gun owners.
You know, it was bad. It's bad for maybe even America, not just gun owners. I think maybe bad for Americans. You know, when maybe it's because I'm maybe naive and this is my first time really participating in a legislative process. And I guess you go to school, you learn your civics, you go, political science, and you think the process is fair and we're America, right? When they don't give a bill that they're going to pass, and it's almost designed so that we will fail because we'll look like we're not knowledgeable. And this was not the first time they did this. This is the reason why we don't think it's an accident. And that was our 11th time to finally be able to speak, and never getting these amendments in advance has been a pattern, which is interesting because the whole police department is being sued for bad pattern and practice.
Mm-hmm.
So they just demonstrated maybe all of it is true. You saw it firsthand, the pattern in the legislative process, which we think there's certainly, great senators there who stood up and even there's good questions were asked overall. But the notion that they had to pass it that day was a propaganda by the attorney general and the police department who want this lawsuit to go away quickly. You know, during the hearing, the AG admitted that, if this passes, the case becomes moot, you know? So it's a way to not show to the world what they were doing, because that was my primary opposition, you're not asking the right question.
Yeah.
Why are you not asking, why did we get sued?
Right. Well, and that's the thing. And you know, it's pretty clear that this this is an attempt to try to moot the lawsuit. But, you know, the very day that this debate and ultimately this vote was held, the DOJ filed a request for an emergency injunction, which may, again, have been one of the reasons why this bill was rushed through.
Okay. Do you know when that was filed?
It was filed on Friday, I believe. And it was asking the judge to grant an injunction against the licensing regime because the police commissioner is arbitrarily deciding who gets a permit based on, you know, his own discretion. And, you know, so we'll see what happens. But see, the DOJ
I was busy all day on Friday.
Right. Yeah.
So I wouldn't know that was taking place.
But even if this bill moots the DOJ's lawsuit, all they have to do is file an amended complaint
we don't think it does because it's a pattern practice is what I was, you know, they're not following the law today.
Yeah.
And so changing the law doesn't change their bad behavior.
Right.
And it was interesting that I think the assistant attorney general didn't actually know the law that is on the books today, which was surprising. He said, oh, this is going to make it so much better because we're now putting in a 30-day clock on it to get the license issued.
Yeah.
And my attorney, Judge Adam Christian, quickly pointed out, well, we did point out in the law that already says that. And they still took 6 months to say, oh, by the way, no, to something that they later had to reverse. So those are false, you know, I guess false promises.
Right. Yeah. And yet, so the help is not really helpful. But there are far more harms that are coming about as a result of this bill, right? And I want to get into what the bill said, but I also do want to talk about how this particular piece of sausage was made because, you know, the last time you were on the program, you talked about this amended version, the yellow bill, that, you know, they introduced just a couple of days ahead of time. Was that the bill that actually passed or was there another? So they wiped that clean and there was a whole other version.
So to give you the chronology, so the very first one that we started our conversation was the blue, we call it the blue 36-0144. That's the blue one that the
okay.
We call it. That was the very first one that came out. Very bad one.
That was like last year, right?
Yeah, last year, September, I think 4th or 5th.
Okay.
And then since then, there was a amended bill that came that was coming out, and we got a copy of it even though we only had 8 calendar days, 6 business day to review it for the first time before this hearing. So we on June 2nd, we get this bill revised, yellow bill. We call it the yellow bill, right? Revised 364 bill. So we prepare a testimony based on even that, you know, review lawyers, everybody we only have 6 business days and then they want us to, they're going to change the entire, a constitutional debate in the firearms law, not everything, but substantially almost all, and 29 page bill, which we know they went to, you know, tried to do a so-called special order around the December, May 28th, where even the senators, majority of the senators basically say that's not a good idea, where no opposition debate was invited. And they were going to pass it that day. We found out after the fact, fortunately, they at least scheduled a meeting where we get to testify, except for they didn't do anything for 2 hours. So we had many, many testifiers who took off the day, including, mm-hmm. you know, Second Amendment Foundation, Costas. Mm-hmm. Very, you know, it was such a pleasure, and you know, that I called and asked for help. We need they're only relying on their attorney general to opine on if this is constitutional. But the last time he opined that it was constitutional was the very first bill, when Bruin was already known. In 2022, and anybody who was knowledgeable of Second Amendment would know that Virgin Islands law was deficient. So when he said the bill 360144 was, we're in good company to pass it, that was a misstatement. And so when today I said, they were relying on that advice.
Yeah.
So I said, I asked the President Potter, who graciously accepted my ability to bring in a couple independent lawyers. And the Costas from Second Amendment Foundation was, one of the top counsels on this issue.
Right. So, and Costas was live posting on X about the delays there. When did you realize then that, oh, this isn't the yellow bill? This is a whole new amendment that we haven't even had a chance to take a look at.
You know, it's until they asked me. We knew they were sending out potentially, they have done this in, some bills maybe here and there, drafts, circulating that maybe they were going to change, but nothing official. So we're operating from what we got from the President Potter.
Right.
That's what we're asked to testify. I know we're kind of real following kind of people.
Yeah.
We're told to testify on this. Right. So, and then during the hearing and when you have an opportunity to watch, I was asked, so Mr. Ono, they're kind of confused why I keep saying I don't have the bill. Like, we don't have the information. Which version did you see? Have you seen version 4? And I said, absolutely not. Never seen it. And yet you're asking me to opine on it. We don't even know what's in version 4. In the public, it was funny because today's paper came out with my op-ed piece.
Yeah.
And the version on the Daily News, it confirmed that they went to the website and as of Sunday evening, couldn't see it either. The Daily News, the newspaper of record here, has not even seen it. And so that's the environment. So to me, on that technicality, if you call it, and that's the part where I think we lost a little bit of democracy. If I want to, it's maybe overly dramatic, but it was disappointing.
No. That's some Banana Republic stuff right there, Kosei. I mean, it really is. And again, I mean, this bill was introduced, as you say, last September, right? It has been yanked from the calendar 11 different times. There was no reason to pass the bill in the manner that they did on Friday, to ram that through before anybody had a chance to read the text of this legislation. It's been out there for almost a year. This has been an outstanding issue. And then all of a sudden, oh, we got to get it done right now in a matter of hours. No, you're being very, very nice, I think. And I appreciate it because we are family friendly. But I mean, when I look at what happened there, no, you're right. This was an attack on democracy. This was this is not the way that Schoolhouse Rock taught us bills become law. Right.
We could disagree. We could have a disagree on policy. Right. And then everybody gets to put their 2 cents worth in. You get heard. And there was during the debate, I was not even allowed to answer in some cases. The senator wanted to just, yes or no, yes or no. I said, the question was, are we against, firearms being brought on like a child care center or something? And that's not the question you should be asking. We're against anything bad happening on the child care center. In terms of the police officer could come on with a gun. So that's, you're asking the wrong question.
Mm-hmm.
So when I actually, after I found, I realized that the Attorney General's office did not submit and didn't prepare analysis of historical analogs to demonstrate all these restrictions that they're uniquely putting in. Are consistent. I would imagine in a legislative process now post Bruin, before you make it into law, their excuse was, oh, we don't have to prove it until we get sued in court. Well, wouldn't you want to do the analysis before you get to court so you don't get sued?
Right. Yeah.
That'll be a good example. And maybe if I may, I was thinking about this and when I heard that. One, he didn't know about the 30-day rule that was already – he didn't talk to any of the victims.
What 30-day rule are you talking about here, Kosei?
Once you submit your application –
licensing application. Okay.
You have to issue a license in 30 days. That's already in the law. So when he didn't – he said, well, we're putting 30 days in it. Well, it's already in there, not following it. So the fact that he didn't know it was already in it, I was disappointed that he didn't know.
Yeah.
And I was disappointed that he hadn't submitted a historical analog, which any lawyer who's rewriting a firearm laws today would probably prepare.
Yeah.
Right, to justify, because they could have just taken out the illegal portion out of the analysis. and which is the discretionary commissioner part, and just left the stuff that is. So they should have been just doing subtracting. The problem is they took it from the stench out of the room A, and then they moved to Johnny's room B. So the house still stinks.
Yeah. And I want to talk about some of the specifics here. And again, maybe we don't even know everything that's in there. But there is an outright ban on suppressors, including those that are lawfully owned at the moment. Right. That's in there. There's a ban on, quote unquote, large capacity magazines. Is that 15 rounds? Is that how they define it?
Is that that's the part that is tricky.
OK.
Because they're not banning the way it's written. 15 round magazines or more than 15 rounds. They're banning any firearm that could receive magazines that are could be or that are more than 15 rounds, which is the reason why this is much bigger, you know, screw up. Let's call it that.
They're banning the firearms that can accept a magazine that can hold more than 15.
Yeah, and that's the part. It's a 453E, I think it was. Let's see, 452E, 452C. Yeah. And 452C says, and I'll read it, so because it's short.
Yeah.
Because you can make it, any person who has a licensed firearm that was manufactured to hold more than 15 rounds prior to the effective date of this act may own and register the firearm, but cannot sell or transfer the firearm unless the safe or transfer is to the federal firearm dealer or outside of the Virgin Islands. So could hold more than 15 rounds. See, that's the, this is why I was thinking they're trying to write a cookbook on Japanese food.
Yeah.
And they never been to Japan and never had Japanese food or never visited a Japanese restaurant. And
yeah.
That's the kind of mistakes happen.
Yeah. I mean, because you're right. That sounds like that is a ban on, again, you're grandfathered in if you own one now, but going forward, you can't sell or purchase any firearm that can hold more than 15 rounds.
Which means every single semi-automatic rifle.
Right. Any gun that could take an attachable magazine.
Or Glock. Right.
Yeah. That's okay.
That's big no-no. We got a fight on our hand, right?
Yeah.
That's what they think they're going to ban. And the second one that I think your audience will be very upset, because this is an issue has already been dealt with, I think, the 5th and the 11th Circuit, if I'm remembering correctly, where basically they effectively make pistol-braced firearms all illegal. And the way they do it, they don't outright say pistol-braced firearms are illegal. They say handguns are defined as anything less than 12 inches in the overall length. And SBR is defined at anything less than a barrel with a 16 inches or less. And that's banned. So if you have a 9-inch barrel and your gun is overall length is more than 12 inches, which is most pistol-braced firearms, mm-hmm. AR platform, all those currently commonly available in the United States, millions in circulation, probably the most popular format in the country, is now banned.
This, again, I mean, this is just extraordinarily bad legislation. How it was put together is extraordinarily bad. The contempt that is on display for yourself and other gun owners in the Virgin Islands is absolutely reprehensible. I wrote on Saturday. Well, actually, before I get to that, there's one other question. So in the Virgin Islands Consortium coverage of Friday's debate, they noted that there were several senators who had expressed concerns about parts of this legislation and ended up voting for it because the attorney general said, well, we're going to come back with amendments. There was a senator who said, well, we're going to come back and we're going to amend that part. So you guys get a bill that you've never seen before. You don't have a chance to read it. And then the parts that you find out, some of the parts anyway, you're like, well, hang on, time out here. Then they go back and say, well, we're going to change it after we pass this and it becomes law. Is that right, Kosei? I mean, they're still making it up as they go along.
I think their approach was, they kept saying, well, it's not perfect, but it's better to do something. And the point they're missing that everything they do, and it's already testimony from the very first Homeland Security. The question was asked, would this law changed, reduce crime on the streets. And even I think there was a police commissioner says no. You know, it was one word, no. So everything in this thing, so that's why it was funny, because our bill that we prepared, A35, which is actually a 60-page rewrite of the bill rather than a 29, because they're only changing things they like to change.
Right.
There's a lot of things that are not dealt with that are still unconstitutional that we changed. I had to do 60 pages because there are more things that are problematic in the rest of the firearm law, which they don't touch because they like it. You know, they like it. Certain things that are in there are problematic. So because of that, I said every single question where even those who eventually ended up voting for it raised the question. One was, what happens when the police doesn't issue the permit in 30 days? And the answer from the attorney general was, well, you hire a lawyer and you go sue. You know, I have to pay a lawyer and go sue. Well, that's a stupid. You're already violating. Where's the real remedy here? That's what happens when you never ask the question. Maybe never registered a gun in your life.
Yeah.
You know, or my understanding is one of the members mentioned that maybe the attorney general has never shot a gun in his life, and which means if that is the case, he probably never registered a gun in his life. And so you don't really could relate to us. And I wish that, you know, maybe the attorney general could come and experience the process with us. I think that'll be something that'll, I'm reaching out to the attorney general to try to come up with a solution that is effective. Because my goal, as always said, Virginia safe gun owners is not to endanger the community. And we already know that registered firearms don't commit, the firearms don't get used in a crime. So this, once we retain the registration, which is a very draconian and, you know, pretty restrictive policy relative to other states where 29 don't even have restrictive firearms. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, that was my, olive oil, not olive oil, but olive branch to say, hey, I'll keep that. And that way you could sell it to your constituents. The 01 issue is it's registered. Everything after registered, I could have a bazooka, you know, machine gun, because we don't commit crime. And so, not that we're asking for a bazooka and a Sherman tank, but my point is the what kind of length of barrel, buttstock, scope, all that becomes irrelevant, because we know at the very first step, was it registered? And then thereafter, nothing. That's off the table for crime. And so if anything, you should want everybody to register cheaply at $25, as we proposed.
You know, it's what's really funny, because as I was writing my story on Saturday, I'm going through some of the material that you sent me, and I thought I was reading the government's bill, and I'm going through it, and I'm thinking, well, this actually is an improvement. This isn't, I mean, you know, there's still license in there, but this isn't, you know, this is better than what it was. And then it took me a little bit, and I realized, oh, no, this is the VSGO. This is VSGO's amendment. This is not what the government's proposing. This is what you guys were proposing. And then I found the right piece of paper. This was for the yellow bill, so it's not even what passed, but that's when I, oh, yeah, okay, now I can really start to see the difference here. Listen, we're running short on time, but I want to ask, I mean, this bill now, it's not law yet. It goes to Governor Albert Bryant, who in the past has kind of been all over the map. I mean, I wrote a story about him, I think it was like a year and a half ago, where he talked about the need to reform the Virgin Islands gun laws in a way that made it easier. He said something very much what you just said, like, you know, it needs to be easy to register guns because otherwise you got people who are, you know, paperwork criminals, right? They're not violent criminals. They're not out there committing violent crimes, but they maybe illegally possess a firearm because it's so hard to legally own one. And he said that needs to be changed. That needs to be improved. He has also called for all kinds of new gun restrictions. So I don't know where the governor is on this, but you're calling for the governor to veto this bill. I said the governor needs to veto this bill in the piece that I wrote for Bearing Arms on Saturday. Are you asking Virgin Island gun owners, are you asking folks on the mainland to contact the governor and urge him to veto this legislative atrocity?
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, I thought maybe we'll start with, you know, putting my thoughts down on paper as to what happened and make an argument. Because I think that one of the biggest misunderstanding here, and it's a traditional misunderstanding in every jurisdiction. There's a belief that if you write, you know, a piece of paper, firearm law, and I say I'm banning it, somehow the criminals follow it. So, and then And then I could prove it. We have data. What was interesting, the police commissioner, assistant police commissioner, didn't even know how many registered firearms are on the record right now. They don't know. They don't have data. They're operating in the blind. And the senators don't know what the problem is because they never asked us. And the AG is operating in a trying to make a Japanese cuisine when he's never been to Japan, don't speak Japanese, and only been to the shopping mall and saw a Japanese food in the food court. That's not enough knowledge to write this stuff, you know. And I had the benefit of 270 people telling me how it impacts, what needs to be tweaked. You know, the clarification needs to be here. I experienced it firsthand. So I had great knowledge to help them, which we already did the work for them. So the only thing they really need to do, interestingly, the only thing the complaint they had was, oh, Mr. Ono says $10,000 for, you know, liquidated damage if the police violates the civil rights, or $100,000 to the police department. And the reason why I put that in, right now in the U.S. Virgin Islands, if you sue civilly the government, maximum was $25,000. No matter what, which means it's nothing. So it's easier to violate people's rights. Mm-hmm. And even if they lose, it's nothing.
Yeah.
And that's why I put it in. And his argument was, well, if we're trying to avoid litigation or reduce costs, why would he put something in there? It's to prevent the mistake by the police department so they won't do something that'll invoke and bring the Second Amendment task force to the Virgin Islands. It's a preventative. Not to actually incur the cost, because they're going to incur millions if they get a consent decree.
Yeah. Yeah. Okosi, again, I cannot thank you enough for everything that you're doing. All of the folks who, again, they gave up a lot to travel to this committee of the whole last Friday. Again, I think the contempt with which gun owners are being treated right now is reprehensible. This bill's nowhere ready for prime time. Even again, outside of my perspective as a pro-Second Amendment advocate, what you just talked about, the sheer lack of knowledge about how the system works as it is. If you don't know how the system works right now, how do you know what you're offering is going to be an improvement? The fact that this was rushed through again, I mean, it's absolutely appalling. You are a much calmer man than I would be in your shoes right now.
I'm reaching out to the Attorney General. He's a reasonable man. I've known him. He's a reasonable man, and I'm asking for to meet with him because we think we could offer solutions that are effective, that they could solve the problem without jeopardizing what they need to prosecute criminals. And that's the whole thing. They could have just asked us, and that's why I ask a meeting with them, and I assume he will respond and grant us a meeting so that we can solve this more smartly.
Well, I hope that he does. I hope that Governor Brian vetoes this bill as it's written. And I hope that the DOJ Civil Rights Division is paying attention as well, because I imagine that we will see an amended complaint if Governor Brian signs this bill into law. Kosei, again, thank you for your time today. We're going to be staying in touch, and I know there are going to be more developments here, so I look forward to having you back on the program again in the very near future, but thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate the time.
My thanks to Kosei for joining us on the program, and I'm looking forward to talking to him again. Hopefully, it won't be too terribly long, because that just means that something has gone even more awry in the Virgin Islands. And I got to tell you, it is so infuriating to see, again, not just the text, but the process by which this is taking place. You know, I was up in Massachusetts this past weekend for Gun Owners Action League's 250th celebratory dinner. It was a great event, by the way, and thank you to Jim Wallace for the invite. Jim picked me up from the airport on Saturday morning, and we're driving to the event, and we're talking about what's going on in the Massachusetts legislature. And, you know, back, I think it was last November, voters approved via referendum. Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks was talking about this the last time he was on the show as well. Voters approved a referendum for the state auditor to go in and audit the state legislature. And the state legislature just changed the rules. They just changed the rules. And again, it was a bill that was like introduced at 8 p.m. at night, voted on the next morning. Nobody had a chance to look at it. And basically changes the parameters of what the state auditor can do. 73% of voters in Massachusetts said they wanted the auditor to look into the legislature. And the legislature just basically told them, go pound sand. Can't do it. Again, that's contempt for the voters. The way this went down in the Virgin Islands is contempt for the voters. And I don't expect it to happen. But in Massachusetts, every one of those lawmakers that voted to just change the rules so that they don't have to have accountability, every one of them should be voted out by 73% of the people. In the U.S. Virgin Islands, every one of these state senators who pulled the rug out from under gun owners, substituted this bill at the last minute, bill they say is going to make things better, it's going to make things unquestionably worse, in a territory where the right to keep your arms is not treated as a right to begin with. Every one of those senators who voted for that bill, so again, some of them over their own objections, need to be voted out of office. And this to me is not a matter of party. I like what your policies are. I don't like what your policies are. It is, again, a simple matter of, do you respect the voters in any way, shape, or form? And if you don't, again, if your actions demonstrate the contempt with which you hold gun owners, with which you hold voters, your constituents, you don't deserve to hold office. You should be voted out. And in Massachusetts, that means, you get 2 years of Republicans in the state house before it goes back to being dominated by Democrats who hopefully will at least have a little bit more respect for the voters. You folks in Massachusetts, you liberals, you should be willing to put up with that. Because right now, you're just being used and abused. And come November, you've got a choice. You can either vote for the abusers or you can vote to free yourselves from the abuse. It's despicable. And, we're dealing with a lot of this in Virginia, too. I could get off on the proposed budget that apparently has been agreed to between the governor and the House. But we'll be talking about that later, because I think there is some language in there that is going to be perhaps a gun ban bill in disguise. But we'll get to that as we get closer to the special session in Virginia on the budget. Right now, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Missouri. Bolivar man sentenced after using dating website to lure robbery victim. All right, so this guy, William Pierce, born in 1992, so that makes him old enough to know better, is pleading guilty to stealing and unlawful use of a weapon after luring a victim on a dating site to steal their car with a knife. Charges of first-degree robbery and armed criminal action were dismissed as part of the plea agreement. Now, Pierce was sentenced to 7 years for stealing, for 4 years for unlawful use of a weapon. The sentence is going to run concurrently. You're looking at 7 years. But you're not looking at 7 years, because the sentences will not be running concurrently because the judge suspended the execution of the sentence and instead placed Pierce on 5 years of probation. How about that? Back in February, the victim drove to Bolivar to meet a woman that he met on a dating site. Victim said the woman told him to pull into an alley where the two of them would have some privacy. Pierce then showed up, along with another male subject. Pierce allegedly opened the driver's side door, punched the victim in the face. Pierce then restrained the victim in his seat by putting his arm across his chest, held a knife to the victim's throat. Once the victim was out of the vehicle, Pierce got into the driver's seat with an unidentified male, and then a third individual, a woman, who showed up, drove out of the alley. Pierce has been released from the Polk County Jail on a $75,000 bond, or was released from the jail on a $75,000 bond, and now, again, sentenced to nothing more than probation for that crime. Now, we can argue if 7 years is too long of a sentence for this, but I'd like to think we can all agree that 5 years probation is too light of a sentence. again, he robbed somebody at knife point, punched him in the face, and has essentially been told, hey, just don't do it again. Just don't do it again. Can't imagine the victim satisfied with that deal. I know I would not be if I were the individual who had been robbed. Just a word of advice, though, as I'm now entering the dating scene after 30 years away. If a woman says, hey, let's have some privacy. I've never met you before, but, you know, I want to have some quality time with you in an alleyway. That should send up some red flags. Like, admittedly, I've been out of the scene for a while. That would trigger some red flags with me. Meet him for coffee somewhere. If you don't feel like springing for dinner, but, you know, it's always good to have at least a couple of minutes in public before you try to move things, you know, to someplace a little more private. All right, on to today's armed citizen story from Charlotte, North Carolina, where a suspected intruder was shot and killed during a breaking and entering at a home there in Charlotte. According to the Charlotte-Mecklenburg police, the individual who died is suspected of being an intruder who, quote, made an entrance into the residence in East Charlotte. Happened Sunday in a mostly residential area. There's a daycare facility nearby, but other than that, it's pretty much just houses. Looks like houses built in the 50s, 60s, you know, pretty well maintained. Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department said in a news release, shortly after 10:30 in the morning, officers responded to a breaking and entering call for service. Upon arrival, officers discovered a victim with a gunshot wound. Medic pronounced the victim deceased on the scene. The body was found outside of the residence, but police still investigating whether or not the shooting occurred inside or outside the home. Don't have a lot of details about this other than, again, this individual was suspected of a breaking and entering. No reports of the homeowner being arrested, so police are apparently treating this as a case of self-defense. We will keep our eyes out for any more information as it becomes available, and hopefully we will learn more details in the days to come. Finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A good Samaritan in Houston, Texas, who helped pull the driver from a burning vehicle after a car crash on Memorial Drive. This was early Monday morning. They said the vehicle was heading east on Memorial Drive when the driver appeared to lose control. Two people inside the vehicle. Happened just after midnight, about 12:30 in the morning. According to the police, as a result of the crash, one person was fatally injured. Another person, critical condition, at a local hospital. But authorities say that a good Samaritan who was nearby was able to pull the driver from the burning vehicle before they left the scene. So we don't know who this good Samaritan is. They didn't stick around, but they did extricate this driver, who apparently was the individual who is currently in critical condition. Police say that the speed appears to have been a factor, though they say the investigation remains in the early stages. So they've also not determined whether intoxication played a role. There was a lot of damage to the vehicle, both from the crash itself and then the resulting fire. And again, wish we knew a name. But this anonymous good Samaritan on their way after saving a life in the right place at the right time, unable to do the right thing. Apparently didn't want or need the attention, but glad that they were there in that moment. And that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Matthew Hoy. Matthew has a new book out. We actually ran a excerpt from the book at Buried Arms on Friday. It's called Fact-Checking Frauds, How Fact-Checkers Distract, Deceive, and Distort Our Politics. It should be a great conversation. Looking forward to it. So be sure to check that out tomorrow. Be sure to check out buriedarms.com today and throughout the day, keeping up to date on all the latest Second Amendment news and information there. No news on the hardware cases out of the Supreme Court, so they'll be relisted. There are, I think, three conferences left, and that's it. I mean, either the cases get accepted, they get denied, maybe they get held over, or they could be GVR'd, right? They could grant cert, vacate the lower court opinions. In some cases, it'll be the second time for a GVR, and then remand those cases back down to the lower courts. I wish I knew what was on tap for these hardware cases, but you got five of them. You got three cases dealing with bans on so-called assaultments, two dealing with large capacity magazines, and Supreme Court, maybe they've got an idea about what they're going to do, but the short term is they're going to be relisted for the next conference, and we'll go from there. Enjoy the rest of your Monday, as well as Mondays can be enjoyed, and we will talk to you tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.